Well, most often it's, will you do the Tarzan yell?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you pull your ear?
Mm-hmm.
Is Tim Conway really that funny in real life? How did you find Vicky? But it's all random, Mark. I don't know what anybody's going to ask, and I don't know who I'm going to call. And they just raise their hands, and I say, okay, the man with the red tie. And then whatever they ask, I have to answer. And so it keeps the old gray matter ticking, because I never know what they're going to say.
Can you think of an off-the-wall question you've had recently while you've been doing this tour?
Yes, of course I can. This was a few years ago. I've talked about this, too, because it was so unusual. We were in Texas, San Antonio, where I was born, and this lady up in the balcony was waving her hand. She was wearing pink, and I remember, and she stood out. And I said, yes, lady up there. She said, Carol, if you could be a member of the opposite sex for 24 hours, but then pop back into being yourself again, who would you be and what would you do? And, of course, the audience laughed because I just looked blank. You know, I thought, oh, my God, what am I going to, you know. And I said a little prayer. And I said, dear Lord, to myself, I don't know what I'm going to say, but I'm going to open my mouth and whatever comes out is your fault. That's exactly what happened. I had no idea this was going to come out of my mouth until it did. I said I'd be Osama bin Laden and I'd kill myself.
Oh, my.
And I said, thank you, Lord. Yep, the audience went nuts.
That's a showstopper.
Yeah.
Where do you go from there?
That's right.
I think that was something that made watching your show so appealing, was that you would be ad-libbing and you would be honest with your answers.
Right.
And I remember someone asking you about your Bob Mackie gowns and you talking about always needing pockets. So you always wanted to have a place to put your hands.
Right.
But I think growing up, I wanted to grow up to be Lyle Wagner. I think that seemed like a pretty good job.
he was a delight to work with. We loved Lyle.
Where are you at right now in terms of picking and choosing your projects? Do you get offered a lot of things?
Well, yes and no. It depends. Like a guest shot on a sitcom or a show or whatever that I watch and like, you know, I'll try to do it. Right now, I just finished my third book, and Simon & Schuster is publishing it, and it comes out in April 9th. And so I'll be doing a lot of promos and going back to New York to do the obligatory talk shows and things like that to promote it. So I'll be really busy in April and May because I'll be doing a lot of Q&As in May, too.
And what about your new book? Tell us about that.
Well, that's about my relationship with my daughter who passed away 11 years ago. And she was quite a character. And we were very close. And she had been writing a story. She was a writer and a performer and a singer and lyricist, all of that. But she was writing a story about a bohemian girl, not unlike Carrie, who has a road trip to Graceland with a mysterious cowboy. And she was writing that when she was diagnosed with cancer. And so the last time she was in the hospital, she asked me if I could finish it for her. And I couldn't. I said, Carrie, you know, those are your characters to write. I don't know. It was almost done, but she had a beginning, part of a middle, and the ending. But she had the middle part needed fleshing out. And her request had been living with me all these years. And finally, I decided I would write about her and our life together, because we had our ups and downs when she was a teenager, and how she came out of it and became quite a force in her own right. So I write about that. I write about her crazy drug abuse when she was a teenager and how we got through that, and then how she got her life in gear. And she did several movies and television shows and on, and she was really doing well, and then she was diagnosed. And so it's about that. It's about her struggle with cancer. But it's not all doom and gloom. There are some funny moments. And I write about from the minute she was born. And so it's called Carrie and Me, A Mother-Daughter Love Story.
You have often been very revealing in your writing, I think, about your life, your disappointments. Mm-hmm. And that pathos also sometimes is certainly evident in your comedy. Of course, the Mama's Family sketches come to
right.
mind.
We one time, just as an experiment when we were doing it, rehearsing, we didn't try to do it as Eunice and Mama. We did it as a straight little 10-minute bit, doing it straight,
okay.
without trying to be funny.
Yeah.
It was so heavy because the writers didn't write jokes for that sketch. They wrote character. So when you play it straight, I mean, it's a great acting exercise to say, okay, take this, play it straight, now make it funny, or make this, do it funny, and now make it straight.
I have to say that I was very sensitive as a child to things like that, and those sketches would depress me, tremendously.
I understand.
But I think I learned also a lot about how people can relate to each other unsuccessfully.
Right.
And how easy it is when you're so accustomed to someone in your life. And I think that was part of their problem was mm-hmm. they were all together way too much.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And
the writers, Jenna McMahon and Dick Clare, who wrote that, both had mothers that they totally hated. So that was the premise. You know, that they couldn't get along. It was totally dysfunctional families that they both came from. And when I read it, I immediately thought of Southern or Southwestern or Texas. They did not write it with those accents in mind. I did that because I was from Texas, and I just remember people talking like this, and, you know. And I just read it that way, and then Vicki picked up on it. And Harvey, and that's how we did it.
What about your participation in this Funny Ladies documentary?
I don't remember when I did it. I mean, it was a long time ago. And so I'm anxious to see it because I honestly don't remember how long ago it was that I was interviewed. It was a while back.
Well, when people ask you about who your major comedy influences were, I mean, mm-hmm. we know you were a big film fan growing up.
Yes.
But what kind of funny men or women do you think really influenced you the most?
Well, Sid Caesar was my inspiration. And, of course, I loved Lucille's comedy. I loved it. But my whole deal was wanting to do variety. When I was first got to New York and I was checking hats at a ladies' tea room, and which is kind of funny because not too many women check their hats, you know, but I'd get their coats and packages and things, you know. But there was a comedian who stood in for Sid when they were blocking, and we got to know each other and have coffee at the Stage Delicatessen, and he said, would you like to come and watch a rehearsal sometime? I said, oh, yeah. So he sneaked me in, and I sat up in the balcony. And I got to watch a few of Sid Caesar's rehearsals, you know, with Carl Reiner and Howie Morris and Imogene Coca.
Sure.
And it was just great. And I loved his show, and it was live. So I remember I was living in a place called the Rehearsal Club for young ladies interested in the theater. And I won, by the luck of the draw, two tickets to My Fair Lady, which was the biggest hit on Broadway at that time. But it was for a Saturday night, and I gave them to my roommate because I didn't want to miss a Sid Caesar show. So, because that was live, and you'd never see it again.
No.
And whereas I knew My Fair Lady would be running forever. So, you know, I gave the tickets away.
You had your priorities.
That's right.
Yeah, absolutely. I watched the trailer earlier for Funny Ladies, and they showed some clips of you and some other wonderful female comedians. Pat Carroll was there, Phyllis
Pat.
Diller was there.
Uh-huh.
And I know that when Phyllis passed just a few months ago now, we were in tears in the newsroom reading some of her jokes out loud to each other. And we were just sitting there having the biggest gas all day long. And I just thought maybe you could tell us something about Phyllis Diller.
Well, I knew her quite well. She was, in fact, when Carrie, my daughter, was born, she was about 3 months old, and my husband and I came out to California, and we were staying at the Beverly Hills Hotel, and I had Carrie in one of the little cabanas and everything, and I'd take her into the pool and all, and Phyllis was there, and so we got acquainted. I started to kid her because she was always talking with her, you know, her costumes and about how flat-chested she was.
Mm-hmm.
She had a great figure. But she toned it down with those shifts that she would wear. But we kept in touch. She was a guest on my show. And the last time I saw her, a bunch of us used to go out to dinner. We would call Phyllis, Dick Martin and his wife, Don Rickles and his wife, Bob Newhart and his wife, Phyllis, my husband and me, and Tim Conway and his wife. Now, let me tell you, you had to know the Heimlich maneuver if you're going to eat with these people. All laughs. And she was in her 90s. And she just held court and so sharp. The body went away, but the mind was always there.
I thought for a second there you were going to tell me that the funniest person was, you know, somebody's wife or something, not one of the famous comedians.
That's kind of true, too.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah.
I think that comedians sometimes, when they're insecure, that's when they really pour it on. But in a group like that, where everyone's comfortable with each other, is there still a sense of, however friendly?
Can you top this?
Yeah, one-upmanship.
Yeah, but not really with this group, because they're all very close friends. And they travel to Europe together, like Newhart and the Rickles. They've been all over the world together. They're very close.
What does it mean to you when you're on stage and you hear that belly laugh come from the audience?
Oh, it's a total turn-on. It's the most pleasant sound I can think of. That's all I can say.
Do you ever visit your star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame?
No.
Have you ever visited? Were you there when they commemorated it?
I was fired at that theater where the star is. I was an usher, and I didn't want to seat a couple during the last 5 minutes of a Hitchcock movie. So the manager fired me. So years later, when they said, "Where do you want your star?" I said, "Right in front of that theater." And that's where it is. And I even have the door I was fired in front of, because the theater, it was the old Warner Brothers theater. Now, the people who were in charge of it knew that story about my being fired in front of the door on aisle 2, and they gave me the door. So it's in my house.
Wow.
Yeah, it goes into my study.
Was that the only time you were fired from a job?
Yes. Yeah, it was because I was such a movie nut. I didn't want these people to have this movie ruined by seeing the last 5 minutes of an Alfred Hitchcock movie. I mean, really.
I completely side with you.
Yeah,
I mean, you were protecting artistic
integrity. Don't. And the manager said, "What's the matter?" And this woman said, "She won't seat us." And he fired me.
Oh.
And the movie was Strangers on a Train.
Oh, I love that film.
Yeah.
Farley Granger.
Yeah.
Did you ever have a chance to talk to Alfred Hitchcock? Did you ever get to tell him that story?
No, but I got the poster of Strangers on a Train, and my PR person had told Hitchcock about this, and he signed the poster and drew a caricature of himself.
That's so nice.
Yeah, so that's hanging up in my house.